What are you trying to with that?
Shalom, welcome back. Jeff Sachs here. Masechet Tanit. Finally, we did it. We're up to the third perek here on Web Yeshiva and Mishkan Tzipora in Efrat. The third perek deals with a whole variety of topics. The Gemara had been talking about this issue related to rain. And the lack of rain as a kind of sign that things are not right in the world, that our relationship with God could use improvement, and therefore the weather becomes the barometer to judge whether or not we need to upgrade our tshuva and our tefillah. And if there's no rain, so that's a sign that we have to fast. But there are, of course, other types of calamities and catastrophes and disasters and persecutions and disease and crop failure that might also warrant fasting. So those topics, the non-rain, I kept distinguishing between calendar day fasts that correspond to the historical things and the rain, or let's say the rainy day fasts for the lack of rain. But now we're going to talk about a third category, which are fasts that are conditioned by particular events in the news, as it were. And how you know when you're supposed to start fasting. The Gemara also suggests that there are certain bad things that are bad, but they're not so bad that you have to fast, but they are bad enough that you might need to do tshuva. And tshuva is usually connected to, what's the main response for a need for tshuva? What's the main ritual response? No?
Tefillah.
Prayer. Then the Gemara, another major topic the Gemara is going to discuss in the Perek is the difference between a kind of, let's say, national calamity for the Jewish people, something that affects the whole Jewish people, and something that affects a more localized type of event. The Shoah, certainly comes to mind as something that affects the entirety of the Jewish people. Had Hitler been successful, had he reached, as those dystopian movies, imagine what would have happened if Hitler had conquered North America. So we know what would have happened to the Jews in North America, God forbid. And then more localized things. Tach V'tat is taking place in Eastern Europe, in what today is Poland and Ukraine. A terrible thing. Many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Jews were slaughtered. Many hundreds, thousands of Bate Knesset were destroyed. But it wasn't affecting the Jews in the Rhineland, and it wasn't affecting the Jews in Italy. So, presumably, this would be an interesting. I assume somebody has researched this. If not, it's a doctorate in the making. What was the knowledge of a major event in the Jewish world in the pre-modern era, in the mid 17th century? What did they know about the Gzeirot Tach V'tat, that pogrom that went on for over a year? What did they know about it in Germany? What do they know about it in Italy? That's an interesting question. Like the degree that any one community knew about what was going on in far-flung Jewish communities, simultaneous or relatively simultaneous, however fast news could travel. Right. So would they need to be fasting? We mentioned last week or the week before the 20th of Sivan, which was a major fast day in commemoration of a particularly terrible day in the 1648-49 pogroms of Tach V'tat. How widely spread was that observed in the early years? Was Egyptian Jewry fasting? Did they know about what was going on? Did Jews in Turkey, or even this very small Jewish settlement in Eretz Yisrael, did they know what was going on? Were they fasting? So that question of what affects a localized Jewish community and what affects Klal Yisrael is also a a topic in the Gemara. And then there's another larger issue which has to do, let's say, with what happens when we are answered, when we are redeemed. What's the appropriate response of praise and thanksgiving to Hashem? And what do you do if you're in the middle of fasting and doing tshuva and suddenly you're redeemed? Right? Let's say it's a fast day and you're fasting to be rescued from some pogrom, and boom, you know, like those cases we saw last week where they're coming to get the guys and the vile despoiler Taryonos, and the other case that we saw, they're struck down right there, bo bayom. So you're in the middle of a fast day, but you've been rescued right then on that very day. Do you have to continue fasting, or do you say no? The fast is over because, well, you know, there's no more purpose. These are all the topics that are discussed in the third perek, which runs from Daf Yud Chet Omud Bet to Daf Kof Vav Omud Aleph. That's about seven, six and a half dapim in the Gemara. So we're closing in, folks. By the time we're done, we'll be able to get together and have a siyum, because there won't be any more corona. Like the previous perek, all of the Mishnayot in the perek are up front. The whole perek of Mishnayot are up front, and then the Gemara comes. So I'm not going to do what we did last time. I'm not going to learn all the Mishnayot now. I'll learn a couple, two, three Mishnayot now, and then we'll skip ahead to the Gemara, because anyway, we'll have to keep coming back and forth as we go along, unless someone's memory has been greatly improved, and you'll be able to remember all the Mishnayot by heart. So unless you think that's happened, I hope you'll defer to my judgment on this one. We'll learn, let's say, the first three Mishnayot of the Perek. Although, by the way, I would say, I've often observed, when you start a new Perek of Gemara, it's not a bad idea to learn all the Mishnayot anyway, even when they're not all printed up front like this. You know, take the Kahati or go on to Sefaria in your free time and learn the whole Perek, because when you learn the whole Perek of Mishnah before you get into the Gemara, it kind of gives you a map. You know, what I just summarized for you, it gives you the map, the lay of the land of where you're going to be, where you're going to be going. So the Mishnah says, Seder Ta'aniyot Elu, the fasts, you know, which increase in scope as you go along, the fasts that we mentioned previously, Seder Taniyot Elu Ha'amur Birivia Rishona, that are fasted in relationship to the first rainfall, or meaning the absence of the first rainfall. Aval Tzmachim Sheshanu, but if vegetation changes, if it gets deformed, if something goes wrong with the crop, if there's some kind of crop failure, the vegetables, they get they start to rot, or they start to wither, or there's something strange about the way that the crops are growing. Matri'in aleihem miyad. So unlike the fasts for rain, where we say, well, we wait a certain amount of time, and if it hasn't rained this amount by that time, then you start this whole process of fasting. We don't, you know, like right now, for example, we're the first week in Kislev, we haven't really had much. I think there was, what, one day of rain so far here? I don't remember. Do you remember? And it wasn't even such a huge rain, right? It's already starting to get, we should be getting some rain, but I don't think there's any rain forecast for at least for the next week or so. Is anybody following the weather? I don't keep up with these things. I stick my nose out the front door to know whether or not to bring the umbrella in the morning. But people should be starting to think, oh, we could use some rain already at this point in the year here in Eretz Yisrael. But if there's some kind of crop failure, so then you start matri'in miyad. Matri'in means what?
float or show for.
Well, we saw previously in the Gemara, in the first parak, I think, that matri'in might literally mean tru'ah, blowing the shofar, but it's probably a synonym for crying out in prayer, right? That was a discussion that we had in the Gemara over there. And they cry out in prayer immediately. V'chein shepaskug shamim ben geshem legeshem arba'im yom. And if the rains begin, you don't start the initial process of fast days, Monday, Thursday, Monday, because you did have an initial rain, but then the heavens dry up. And there's no rain for 40 days, for a 40-day period after the initial rain, matri'in aleihem. You cry out and you fast and you daven on account of that. Mipnei shehi makat batsoret. Because a 40-day dry spell after the first rain has come is a makat batsoret. It's the plague of drought. Even though you already had one rain. The Gemara will ask, what does that mean, makat batsoret? Yardu letzmachim. If you had enough rain that it's good for the vegetables, avalo yardu leilan, but it didn't rain enough for the trees. You understand that trees need more water than vegetables in the vegetable patch. Leilan velo letzmachim. Or you had heavy rains, but you didn't have light rains. You need both rains, you understand. Heavy rains are not so good for the vegetation, even though they're very good for the trees, because the trees' roots go deep. Lazev laze, and you had both kinds of rain that's good for crops, rain that's good for the orchards. Avalo leborot leshichin v'lema'arot. But you don't have the amount of rain that you need to fill up the cisterns and the wells and the caves, you know, the places that serve as the reservoirs for the drinking water. Matri'in aleihem miyad. So there's three different types of rains you need. You need the rain for the vegetation. You need the rain for the trees, and you need the rain for the reservoirs, for the wells, for the cisterns. So if you are lacking any of those rains, so then you start fasting, even though you've had two out of three of the kinds of rain. We're not talking about a drought. We're having rain, but we're not getting the right kind of rain, or not all of the right kind of rain. V'chein ir shelo yardu aleha gshamim, and a city that didn't get rain. Dichtiv v'himtar, there's a posuk in Amos, v'himtarti al ir achat v'al ir achat lo amtir. You have two different cities. In one city you have rain. In another city, a nearby city, you don't have rain. Navi and Amos says that this could be that Hashem could punish only one city. One city is righteous, one city is wicked. The righteous city will get rain, and its neighboring city won't. Chelka achat timater, one place or one area got rain, and the pasuk continues vechelka asher lo tamtir aleha tivash, and the other city, the other place that didn't get rain, that'll dry out. Turn the page, Daf Yud Ted Omer Aleph at the top. The Mishnah goes on. Ota ha'ir, mitaneh umatra'at. So that city, the city that didn't get rain, so they have a fast. They have a tshuva and a tefila. V'chol svivoteha mitanot velo matriot. And the adjacent area to the city that didn't get rain, they fast, but they don't need to. They don't need to daven matriot. Let's say that means to daven. Why would the adjacent city not have to do the full thing? No.
They weren't responsible for the sin. They don't. Their tshuva is not as.
So why? So why do they need to do anything?
First of all, because you care about the. You know, there's probably some greater sense of responsibility, and also like oile rasha.
Oile rasha l'shchena. Right? Now, so on one hand, if there's something bad happening to Jews anywhere, you have to feel it. You have to be affected by it. On the other hand, it does affect you. In other words, what? We live in a global economy, and even if their economy was not quite as global as ours, it was global. What do you think if you're a surrounding village to the main city, and the main city is not getting rain, even though in your village you are, you think that's not going to affect your livelihood? It's going to affect your livelihood. But it's not quite the same as saying you're being directly punished. Rabbi Akiva Omer, but Rabbi Akiva says about that surrounding areas, matriot velo mitanot. No, they daven, but they don't have to fast. I mean, what
makes no sense?
What makes no sense?
Makes more sense that they should daven or blow the shofar than they should fast.
Then they should fast.
If you want to fast already, then why not daven and blow the shofar? I don't get how you fast without daven.
Yeah. How you fast without davening?
In other words, what does it mean to say, if you say that Maria means just to cry out, mm-hmm. then how do you have a fast and you don't cry out?
How do you have a fast but you don't cry out? You don't eat.
I don't know, but I meant these kind of fasts that are declared for a specific situation, you know, then obviously the whole point of the fast is to cry out to Hashem for relief from the situation. So, you know, to say that they fast and they don't cry out makes no sense at all. It even if you say it means blowing the shofar, then it at least makes some sense.
So you're saying Rabbi Akiva makes more sense?
Rabbi Akiva makes more sense according to your interpretation of Ma'ariyin.
And that
according
is...
According to the interpretation I suggested, and they make equal sense.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now let's skip ahead to the next Mishnah talks about what if there's some other kind of calamity, like let's say a building collapse. So building collapse is a little less directly affecting the surrounding area. But we're going to skip that. We're going to skip ahead from the Mishnah to the Gemara, and we'll come back to the Mishnah throughout the Perek at need. But I really do advise you to, it's worth looking at all the Mishnah up front. So the Gemara says here at the bottom of Yotet Omer Aleph, Seder Taniot Ha'Ela Hamura B'Reviya Rishona. So the process of declaring the fasts Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, three fasts, seven fasts, etc. That's talking about when the first rainfall hasn't come. So the Gemara asks, "Vriminhu?" The Gemara attacks that and says, "Rivia Rishona Vishnia Lishol Shlishit Lehitanot." But wait a second. We learned in the Gemara that you don't start fasting immediately after the first rain hasn't shown up. Right, the first rain doesn't show up. The second rain doesn't show up. You daven. You ask. You shoel. You ask for the rain. You pray for the rain. And only after the third anticipated round of rain hasn't shown up do you start to fast. But our Mishnah here seems to imply if the first round hasn't shown up, you start fasting. So that contradicts what we learned earlier. So Omar Rav Yehuda. Hachika Amar. So Rav Yehuda says, this is what the Mishnah is talking about. Seder Ta'aniot Ha'amur Eimatai. Which series of fasts? When do you start that series of fasts? Bizman Sheyatza Revi'a Rishona Ushnio Shlishit Velor Yuduk Shamim. Rav Yehuda kind of like interprets our Mishnah to say there's like chasurei mechsera. It's kind of like there's an implicit thing inside the Mishnah that if read literally, you're going to be led astray. But really what it means is the first three rounds of rain, that's when you would start fasting. Aval yordu gshamim b'revi'a rishona. But if the rain does fall, if the first rainfall does fall, v'zaru v'lo tzamchu, And what do? They start planting the crops, and they don't grow. Inamit samchu v'chazru v'nishtanu. Or the first rain comes, you plant the crops, they sprout, but something goes wrong, and the crops, there's some kind of crop failure. Matri'in aleihem miyad. So then you start the tshuva process right away. So Rabbi Yehuda kind of like finesses the meaning of our Mishnah. So Omar Rav Nachman, again, we see already this distinction between lack of rain does not cause an immediate alarm. Until now, we've seen this kind of very deliberate process that says we're expecting rain on a certain date. If it hasn't come by that certain date, you start davening. Right? Then we should assume that by the next scheduled rain, it'll show up. If that hasn't, you keep davening. The third, then we kick in this process of fast. It's a very gradual process. But other things, like crop failure or crop disease, that's an emergency. That you break the glass, you press the red button, and you matria miyad. So Omar Rav Nachman, dafka nishtanu. Rav Nachman says, this is talking about specifically a case. You break the glass, you hit the red button in a case when the crops, their appearance changes somehow. Aval yavshu lo. But if they've gone dry, you don't immediately start the tshuva process. So the Gemara says, pshita, that's obvious. Nishtanutznan. The topic of our Mishnah is, I will call the topic of our Mishnah, break the glass, hit the emergency button. Right? The Mishnah doesn't talk about crops drying out. It talks about this idea of nishtanu. Right? I mean, Yehudi, you sent me a picture the other day of a shidafon. Oh, maybe I have it.
Something I should have gotten them all out. I didn't realize.
Wait, I have it here. I have it here in my computer. I have it here in my computer. This is in an apple crop, right? So you said that this was apple blight. This is not merely that the tree is drying out, but it's some kind of disease, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Because to me, it looks like what?
Blight means that something is eating away at it. In other cases, it's a fungus or some other microorganism.
Uh-huh. Right, I mean, you see that it's not the tree is drying out because there are certain leaves that are still green and lush and certain that are all brown, and you see there's apple here that's all...
You don't want it to extend to the other ones.
Right. So that's the case.
Well, even though they didn't know about microorganisms, they certainly did know that something that starts close by can then spread.
Yeah. I mean, they knew that from there. They knew that
microorganisms to understand the epidemiology of what's going on.
Yeah, they knew this from simple observation. You spend enough time working with the crops, you see how things work. So the Mishnah says, Nishtanu. Omer of Nachman, Dafke Nishtanu. That's what it's talking about. Tnan. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. So why does the Mishnah? No, and as Rav Nachman says that we start fasting immediately when it's a case of nishtanu, when they look funny, when something changes in their appearance. But if they dry out. So drying out is not the necessary, because they understood that drying out is not disease, right? It's not likely to be, it gets a little dry. You can water it. It can perk up again. And
Steinl has a different answer, by the way. He says that it's because the difference is that the if they change, they could change back. So there's, it's worth being a thing. But if they dried out, it's too late. So there's no point in.
So Tzricha. So Right, so that's what the Mishnah, the Gemara says, Pshita nishtanu tnan, lo tzricha de akun. Right? It's talking about the case of when they make stalks. When the vegetables start making stalks after they've become dry. Right? Mahu de tema, akanta miltahi. So you might think that the plant gets dry. But then it's dry, but it's still growing, and it makes stalk. You know what? The stalk is like the part of the plant. Think of like a tomato plant. When you plant a tomato seed, it, first comes up like a little leaf. At a certain point, the stalk.
Wait, that's the Steinsalt.
What?
I say the notes of Steinsalt are a little bit more elaborate. They give you two choices here, one being greening and the other being stalking.
Greening and stalking. Well, that's what I just said. First the green leaves come up, but then the stalk, the shoot becomes a little more kashiach, a little more sturdy, and it grows up, and then the leaves and the vines grow out of that, and it produces the flowers, and the flowers produce the fruit. So I might have thought that if it's still making stalk, even though it's dried out, that's enough. Komash malon. That's not the case. Rav Nachman therefore is teaching us that's not the case, right? That if the plant has changed in appearance, so you do start davening because you could save it still. But if it's dried out, there's nothing you can do. V'chein, shepasku gshamim ben geshem legeshem. And the Mishnah said, when it's, you have the first rain, and then you have 40 days without rain in between, so my makat batzoret. The Mishnah had said a 40-day period of dryness after the first rain, that's the makat batzoret. That's the plague of drought. Amar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, what does it mean, makat batzoret? Why don't they just say it's drought? What do you have to say that it's a makah, that it's a plague of drought? So Omar Rav, makah hameviya ladei batzoret. The 40-day period itself is not a drought, because usually there's enough moisture in the earth. There's enough water in the reservoir or in the cistern, but it's the plague, the punishment that brings with it afterwards, we will get to the state of drought. So Omar Rav Nachman, Nahara Anahara. Oh, wait, where's, I'm sorry, I have to open up the, here, Yud Tet Omid Beis, Nahara al Nahara. Batsurta. When you have river to river, that is a batsurit. That is a drought. So what is river to river? We'll have to explain. Medinata kafna. But if you have country to country, or area to area, that is not a drought, that is a famine. Kafna's famine. So what does it mean, Nahara Anahara? So Rashi says, in the previous Omud, Rashi says that what Rav Nachman is saying is there's a difference between a drought and a famine. Meaning, what's worse, a drought or a famine? Mistama famine, because a famine involves a drought, right? So there's different stages in how this comes about. Rashi says that Nahara Anahara, river to river, is a sign of drought. That means that when you're able to bring produce or fruit or food from a river, you're able to import over the river, that's a batsorit. It's not yet a famine. And it, when it's a famine, then you have to bring, that's when you have to bring food further distances from one country or from one region to another region over land. Right. And that's more serious and more difficult and more costly. Rashi also says that, that in a drought, what happens is that the river dries up. And when the river dries up, you can always move like water from one river to another. Obviously, this is probably describing the reality in Bavel, not in Eretz Yisrael, where we don't really have rivers and we don't really float produce and import things by river. But that was the reality in Bavel. But during a time of famine, you can't import things by water. You have to do it over land, because at that point, even the rivers have all dried up and you can't divert water from one canal or one river to another. And therefore, you have to carry it by camel or whatever it is, further distances over land. Omar of Chanina, the Gemara says, Omar of Chanina, Sa'a basela v'shchicha batsurta. If a sa'a, a measure of grain, sells for one sela, a sa'a is a measure of volume. In our terms, it ranges between, depending upon which shita you follow, it ranges from between 8 liters, the Chazon Ish says 14 liters, but that's what a sa'a is. It's like a bucket, right? It's like, let's say, around the size of, you know, like the pail that you use in your house to do sponge. So that's like a small pail, maybe. That's a sa'a. So if a sa'a of grain is selling for one sela, so that's the sign of a batsoret. In other words, he said we can look at the market, and the market indicates, there are market indicators, right, that tell us when we're probably in a drought, because the cost of grain is going to be affected. A sela is about 17 grams of silver in our today's measure. It's not always so easy to tell what that was worth in the times of Chazal, because you know, the times of Chazal were many hundreds of years. You know, it's like saying like a gallon of milk costs $1.25 in America. Well, I don't know how much, Yehudi, how much does a gallon of milk go for today?
A lot more than what you just said.
Yeah. But once upon a time, I mean, in my lifetime, a gallon of milk was $1.25.
Yes, when I was a kid.
No, even when I was a kid. So we're not the same age, Yehudi.
No, I don't.
So what does it mean? What does it mean to say that in America, a gallon of milk is $1.25? Right? You know, so it depends. It also depends on where, right? It depends on when.
17 grams?
A cell is about 17 grams, yeah.
Grams, so a shekel, a time of Tanakh, was 11 grams,
yeah, but
right?
The shekel, the biblical shekel and the Talmudic shekel were different weights. Were different weights. I mean, the cost of silver today, a sela is about $13, right? $13.50. But it's irrelevant to try to, I mean, it's very difficult to try to figure out like what it meant in the times of Chazal, because just like in our day, prices fluctuated from place to place, from time to time, and you're talking about a very long period of history. But in other words, it would have been pricey to get that much much grain. So if Omer of Chanina saw a basela, that measure of grain at that amount of money, v'shchicha, and you can still, but you can buy it. And that's if you have the money, the cost of the grain goes up, but it's not unimaginable. There are people who can, there are some people that wouldn't be able to afford it, but lots of people would be able to afford it, even though it's more expensive. That's a batsoret. Arba'a velo shchicha, but if the cost goes down, but there's none to be had, so then it's a famine. Right? Then it's a famine. So Omer Biyochanan, lo shanu ela bizman shehama'ot bazol uferot biyoker. Rabbi Yochanan says that that's the case when the value of money is cheap, meaning people have it, people have money, but the money doesn't have too much buying power, and the cost of the fruit is, the cost of the fruit, the cost of the produce is expensive. Aval me'ot b'yoker u'feirot b'zol. But if it's the opposite, if your money is valuable, meaning it's harder to get money, but the produce is cheap, so then matrin alei miyad. So then you start the tshuva process, because nobody's going to be able to have. It's like the 1%. It's, you know, this is when Bernie Sanders gets the picture. He says only the 1% can buy fruit. There's fruit to be had, but nobody can afford to buy it. D'omer Rabbi Yochanan, Nahirna kadhave kaima arbo sin basela. So Rabbi Yochanan said that I can remember there were four se'ah of vegetables of produce to be had for one se'ah. And nevertheless, v'havu nefishe nefichai kafan b'teveria midelet iser. Right, there was money to be had, but people were starving. You know, they were swollen. Their bellies were swollen. You know, like bellies were swollen not because they're fat. Their bellies were swollen because they're starving. Remember those pictures, those UNICEF commercials that used to be on TV? They would show like these kids starving in Africa, and they want everyone to adopt one, and you'd send money every month. And everybody's like, never understood. Like, they always talk about the starving. These kids looked so fat to me, right? Because they all had these big swollen bellies, right? I was a little kid. I didn't understand, right? That's not a sign of excess. It's a sign of starvation that the bellies are swollen. So Rabbi Yochanan says that there was food to be had, but there was no money. People didn't have any money to buy anything with, so the economy had collapsed. It's the opposite of what they're talking about in America now with the supply chain shortage. There was supply, but there was such inflation. Is that the right word? That nobody had any money to spend, so they couldn't buy the produce no matter what the price was, because they had no money, and therefore people were swollen from hunger in Tiveria, because they didn't even have one isar, they didn't even have one coin to buy the food with. Okay, we're going to pause here. At the two dots, and we will continue next week. Next week, I have another commitment right before our shiur. We'll have shiur. Let's even say we'll have it at the regular time. Could be I'll be a minute or two late in opening up the classroom. So if you're trying to get in exactly at 8:30, it could be it won't be there. Just please be patient. I won't be able to send out the link, too far in advance. Most people enter the shiur through the link I send on WhatsApp, or most people going through the website or through the email you get if you're registered through Web Yeshiva.
Going through the email that you send. Today I had a very hard time. That's why I was here till 10 minutes. Something was wrong.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry about that. You can always contact tech support on Web Yeshiva if you ever have any trouble.
Yeah, so that doesn't happen often.
Right. Okay.
If you do a lot of Zoom shiurim or WebEx shiurim, you become to realize that that's just part of the game.
Right.
And there's
right.
no point getting right. yourself upset about it.
Right. Well, unless
it happens all the time.
We have very good tech support. It's support@webyeshiva.org, but sometimes people are afraid to contact them because they think they're contacting them to offer support of a charitable gift. That's not the case. It's to ask for support, to ask for help. Although charitable gifts are always accepted. Okay, we'll continue next week, and hope everyone's well.
Thank you.
Shalom uvracha.